Welcome to New Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on cybersecurity and the local Colorado economy, focused on cybersecurity industry growth and initiatives that support cybersecurity economics. We hope this special series on blockchain builds your excitement for a possible future which empowers individual privacy. Please follow and participate as New Cyber Frontier is supporting a grassroots community effort to empower the individual in the digital age. Check out privacyforthepeople.org to see the upcoming crowdfunding campaign. Now sit back and enjoy as we introduce our great guest for today's show. Welcome to today's episode of New Cyber Frontier. On today, we have a special effort continuing our series on blockchain, and my guest in the studio with me today is here to help me get out this message. As Dr. Eric Hoffman, a lot of you might be familiar with, he's been a guest on before. Dr. Hoffman is the founder of Handshake Leadership, also works here at SecureSet as an instructor. And interesting, the founding researcher for cyber psychology.
Yes, sir.
Tell me a little bit about that one.
Yeah, cyber psychology, it's the mix between computer science, cybersecurity, neuroscience, and psychology. Is focused on how does the human brain work when you're online? Because we know phishing's been the number one attack for about 15 to 20 years straight. And I'm researching to find out why that is. Why is the user always the number one threat?
Why do we dumbly click on stuff in front of us without thinking?
Exactly. And we have some pretty good ideas. Research is going very well. Going very well.
Interesting. All right. So the thing, though, that we need to talk about, we'll let you say a little bit about it now, but definitely at the end, is your Handshake Leadership. Tell us about that effort.
Handshake Leadership, we do organizational development, leadership development, and cyber education consulting. So we work with teachers, K through 12 teachers, to teach them how to teach cybersecurity. A lot of people do a lot of great things for kids, and we feel sometimes the teacher in the classroom is neglected. So they'll go off and have some fantastic cyber camp and then come back into the classroom where they spend over 90% of their time.
And they could teach the teacher, probably.
Exactly.
So we're bringing the teachers up to par to actually contribute at that level. That's interesting.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Yes, sir. Definitely. So a little bit of background there, Eric. Today, though, we're going to talk. This is our late week podcast. We're going to talk about what's going on with this privacy for the people effort here. And Eric is a little cold on this, which is good because he can ask some questions. He's representing you out there listening, and he can ask the questions that are going through your mind. Hopefully, he will. But this privacy for the people is an interesting effort, as it didn't really start out to be this. But when we look at, let me get my, if you're on video, you can see the slides as we're going through, and this will be, we'll leave this up so you can all see what we're talking about here and get some visuals and everything. But, you know, we're backdropping this against the Constitution. The people basically demand our right to privacy. We're looking at what is the digital landscape like right now, and it's not very friendly to the individual.
That's true.
And that's what this effort is all about. And it's if you think about where does privacy get its foundation, and I've done a lot of research on this, and you know, there's some pieces missing, right? So the Fourth Amendment, 1791, says you have the right to privacy, from the government seizing things, coming into your house, unreasonable search and seizures, right? The Fourth Amendment applies to you in your home. But it's not out in public. It's kind of that public versus private.
Yeah, because things have changed since 1791.
Exactly, where we're going now.
Privacy. Like, what is privacy?
What is privacy now? So what is not addressed at all in the Constitution, in anywhere that privacy is addressed, is how that applies to what I call data proxy agents. That's your Facebooks. That's your Googles. That's these companies that have our data for some reason, whether we gave it to them or not. There is no addressing this in any of the thought process around privacy.
Okay, so we thinking if the information that some would say we willingly give up. So if you post something online or if I create a Facebook account, I'm willingly giving up that data. You're seeing that as private, and that information needs to be held to a standard.
Well, let's say that it's just not addressed, and listeners and yourself can decide,
okay,
is that mine or is that, right now our laws seem to say whoever can get their hands on it, have at it, right?
Yeah, it's kind of the Wild West out here.
Yeah.
It's
kind of so, I mean, West. And this slide says it all. We get people up in front of Congress bumbling over their words. And really, all that Congress wanted to hear from that whole inquiry was, do you feel like you own everybody's data and you can do whatever you want with it? And his answer was yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
And, you know, read these headlines from across the globe. We're looking at, it's the next civil rights movement.
That's very interesting. Very interesting.
What is it that we should have, and how do we get it? Is it something that we have to do with technology? That's kind of a question let's explore here as we talk about what is the privacy for the people. Because I'm flashing up here a chart about a cryptocurrency. And we, most of us, are familiar with blockchain. Cryptocurrency was the first application of it. There was a promise, then a hope, then a possibility that we're going to decentralize, not have Big Brother in the picture, not have a government controlling at least the monetary. Did it work? Or is it, in this graph, just another tool of the banks?
Yeah, it's interesting because what we're teetering on an ethical boundary in incorporating technology and culture within that.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to redefine what the Constitution says as privacy. What did they determine as privacy? And how can that apply within a cyber environment, within a digital environment where information is created at an unbelievably quick rate? And mm-hmm. we have plenty of solutions.
Who owns it? Whose is it?
Exactly. So. It's kind of who owns the internet.
And look at the reality, right? Many of us in cybersecurity or in privacy and security have seen this picture. And it's somebody tried to collect all the companies that have cybersecurity products or security and privacy products out there, right? Mm. So we all know that you just buy all these softwares and you're going to be safe and secure and have your privacy, right?
Yeah,
you good with that? Well, what's the price tag on that for one? And will any of them work together? Nobody really knows.
Yeah.
I mean, it is the Wild West. You coined that perfectly. Perfectly right. Now let's think. I love this slide because we'll look at some historical pretense to this. All these black and white pictures, if you're looking at the video, it's a bunch of cars in the transportation revolution, we'll say back in the 20s, 30s maybe, right? And just flooding the streets everywhere. All these cars, these black and white pictures, people with automobiles T-boned and going every which direction in traffic, right? And what's missing from all these pictures? Cars are in mass production, are in mass use. And what's missing is the uniformity that we all know today.
Yeah.
It took 50 years of cars in mass production just to discover all the pieces. The first automobile, 1886. Mass production, 1901. Ford Motor Company, 1908. And then in 1911, or 1917, it's debatable when the first lines on the roads came into being. One person watched a milk truck leak and saw, wait, that helps keep traffic separated. Another, Jane McCarroll, a nurse, painted a line on Route 99. There's some debate over whether she was just tired of people coming into the emergency room or she actually had a close call herself. But literally, she painted a line on this part in the road. It was called Dead Man's Curve, where people would drag race both ways.
Wow.
And year after year, all kinds of people died at this curve. She painted this line and all the deaths, nothing the next year.
Interesting.
We ran into, and in 1939 it took before we got all the pieces inside the car, the turn signals, the lights, the different indicators, just putting all the pieces together to make uniformity controls for a whole revolution, a whole change in the world as we knew it.
Okay.
And I heard just a couple months ago, we're 50 years into the technological revolution, right?
Sure.
Let's take a break here from our sponsors. We'll be right back in a minute.
Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
All right, welcome back to New Cyber Frontier. On today, the special issue talking about blockchain and privacy for the people, the privacyforthepeople.org campaign that we're helping to sponsor with a group that does blockchain, which we're just getting to now when we talked about before the break, uniformity in the transportation revolution. Blockchain is now the uniformity of the digital age. Now, take that as a statement, and we'll explore that as we continue to go on through this conversation. But a lot of people have realized this and said, hey, this is that uniformity. These are the things that come together. And in Colorado, this is where this effort gets its start here. Senate Bill 18, year 2018-086, the number was, cyber code and cryptology for state records was passed into law. 97% of our legislators voted. And I sat and went as myself and my partner, Senator Lambert, were the sponsors on this bill, wrote this bill. We sat and went through all the houses and told them and explained to them what it was that blockchain could do, because there's a big interest here in Colorado in individual rights for citizens and privacy for citizens. And they sponsor legislation every year, throwing it whatever they think will stick, trying to find a way to hold the government accountable. 97%. It's bipartisan. Across the board, they're all in support of making Colorado a spotlight, a center stage for a new revolution in privacy and individual rights. Okay. Go ahead, you had a question?
So innately, one must understand that privacy is different than security. Privacy can be baked into security.
Mm-hmm.
You can be private but not totally secure. You can be secure but your information totally be private.
My take on that has always been privacy is what we have to implement security to make. We have to design our security. It's the guidelines. It's the policy. It's the legal requirements. It's the what people want to have. It's how they want to be respected. And then we implement security to design, to implement those rules, those controls. That's how I view privacy.
Yes,
and they're connected as, here's the requirements, privacy, here's the implementation, that's security.
Okay, I like that.
I
totally agree with that. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Apologize for interrupting.
No, don't. This is a conversation. So this bill in Colorado, and I know you're familiar with too as well, Eric, requires review of state programs to look for the cost benefit of how money could be saved, how rights and privacy could be addressed by putting blockchain distributed ledger into state programs. And so far they've identified 34 of them. I mean, this could be huge. We roll out one, then another, and it keeps going. But that use cyber risks and losses from mismanagement to offset the cost. So even put in this bill a model of how to pay for it. You know, looking at, hey, here's the risk, here's what we're paying every year, here's the unknowns, what's that costing us?
And this is coming from the government level.
This is a bill.
Expectation of small to mid-sized businesses.
No, it's the state saying this is required to review our programs and look for these trade-offs.
Understood.
And to make public and private partnerships, which is what privacy for the people is. It's the foundation and the groundwork laid by the local community here developing to meet the needs of what the state program will look like, to make this playground. And they've incorporated privacy for citizens and neutral governance, government being visible as their primary charters. So this whole effort is about what it takes to make something that we've never seen before. I always say to my groups when they come in and they're arguing over, well, is it this, is it that? And I was like, we are the music makers. We are the dreamers of dreams.
Yes,
you are defining this as you go. Brings a lot of smiles, and we get the realization of what the weight and the gravity of certain things that we're looking at here doing. But you look here and we have some blockchains. So we started evaluating blockchains for the state program. We looked at some very popular ones out there. We'll say the most widely used ones. Different features. Which one works best? What are we going to use? Did some Sawtooth Lake, which is an up here, Hyperledger Fabric, Ethereum type of applications. Tried a couple of these different things because they all have different strengths. And you know, if you're not familiar with the strengths, you want to turn over to the video, look at some of these I have on the screen here, understand them a little bit. But what was found is, you know, early programs we had put together here at the state, Colorado State University Pueblo actually did this work, and we had a great team working on it. And they used IBM Hyperledger Fabric after evaluating several platforms to say what blockchain can scale to the size that the state needs. So they did some analysis on how many transactions would happen in a certain amount of time and evaluated like 110,000 a day. So they simulated, this is a simulation chart of, it's a ribbon table, but shows all the hits on the bottom from all the distributed endpoints we did and then the total at the top. And we found that there wasn't good solid results for scaling from any of the platforms. So this is kind of the precursor to what this platform for blockchain development community now is. Where did I go? There's some serious limitations to every one of the platforms out there. We'll say early stages technology, major design limitations. Just it couldn't work to scaling to this needs for even one small state program. So we looked at what's the best of both worlds to start from one, make some changes, make some additions, make some strengths and weaknesses. How could we design in and see problems here with like some of the key permission-based large storage requirements are just blowing up with data. The control structure being the permission structure has to be kept by one company. So it works good for a Walmart, but not for Walmart, Sears, Target, and everybody sharing something across industries.
So you needed something more versatile.
Yeah. And then privacy and auditing support was an issue. You get over to Bitcoin, it's totally open, and, yes. And those type of cryptocurrencies are neutral across industries for everybody to use. But they're running into performance problems. There's limits saying how many transactions they can do, how big it's going to get. It works now 10 years later, but in 100 years, it reaches a size, it collapses on itself.
Yeah.
You know, it already takes 2 weeks to go back through and verify to the Genesis block. It just doesn't support indefinite
definitely
life expenditures.
In regards to power and energy,
yeah,
consumption alone, it's just going
to... Exactly, and that energy, that impact. You know that mining of crypto, of Bitcoin... is, you know, you get like $3,000 for a Bitcoin now. I think 3 to 5 is where it's rolling in that range. Worldwide, they're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to mine every coin. And that energy could possibly is a big contributor to some of the greenhouse effect that we're seeing.
I agree wholeheartedly because just the sheer amount of power you need just to get a single Bitcoin mined is it's just going to continue to grow exponentially.
Yep.
So there's definitely huge issues there.
And then things like Ethereum, when we went to smart contract, great concept, great idea. But now they enabled Bitcoin to grow with as big as a contract as you wanted to put in every block. And the size just is exploding. And the ledger growth, and there's kind of no thought process for how to handle things like rapid transactions and decay over the growth. So all these kind of challenges led to the blockchain development community, starting with a common ledger idea and having a solution for every one of these problems. So they've designed in a ledger that will scale indefinitely, has neutral governance, has the back-end support for auditing, no mining, no wasted, has an end-of-life size control, minimal transactions, very rapid, use the most rapid type of blockchain for making transactions out there as the groundwork to work from. And built offline storage, because one of the other big things I think we missed on the first slide was privacy versus visibility. You have to have that balance of things that are public, but yet it's private. And that control wasn't there. And then, you know, individualized data models and even data sales, digital rights management. All these things looked at what is this effort, Privacy for the People, about. 18 months now, this group of students motivated beyond any end. I can't believe it sometimes when I'm at the meetings and how far they've come. They started with a concept, with an idea of how to, you know, get around all these issues. And they've designed a public ledger that has all these pieces you see on here that takes and has a solution for every one of those industry-limiting problems. And it adds the ability that the state needs, the cross-jurisdictional, the data control, the privacy balance, the transactional for paid service ownership, and the auditing and governance back end with accountability. So anything done under an audit structure. Auditing structure is visibility for people to see who audited. So
they can see who audited, but they can't see who did it?
An auditing right now, legal jurisdiction requires if they issue a subpoena, it's public. If they issue a court ruling, it's public. All those things, though, the only thing that has to be done is they have to make the public aware of it, but contain the private contents related to the person it's about. So that balance, but the if you think of programs like Medicaid, one of the big pushers for this was an evaluation by the state of Colorado on Medicaid. And I'm going to talk about that after we come back from break. We're going to hear from our sponsors. We'll be right back.
Security Services are your cybersecurity experts with decades of experience providing professional training services for our clients in various industries. We offer professional training and certification in areas of cybersecurity, safety, health, and environmental services at our academy. Our in-person and online training provides a collaborative environment where students can interact directly with instructors through live chats or in private classrooms. Visit MurraySecurityServices.com for more information.
All right, welcome back to New Cyber Frontier. I'm on here kind of leaving Dr. Huffman in a gasp, I think, a couple times, because he is new to this. And totally. I brought him in because I wanted somebody to ask questions that you might think of as I'm talking about this out there on the internet or wherever you're listening to the show. But we were going over the blockchain development community that started based on the legislation here in Colorado, now has a contract with the state to implement a neutral governance structure. Think of like InterNIC is to the internet and DNS names and everything. How can we implement an organization that is based on neutrality that oversees how a distributed ledger that supports privacy for individuals could work? And I think, you know, when we left here, we were talking about the governance process. And basically, governance is, think of it as the big brother knocking on the back door.
Yeah.
The government saying, we want a back door to everybody's iPhone because, we, you know, this keeps the private content of their iPhone. And we want to knock on the back door. We say, yeah, we absolutely have the way for you to issue a subpoena that comes in and releases that information. But that subpoena issue and that release is public, because it has to be for our rights.
That's public in regards to the data.
To for the people public? To know, not the data that was released, but for the people to know that the government is knocking on the back door.
Okay, I totally understand that. Yeah. Totally understand that.
That was good to ask that question, because it's not about their information being released. It's about the fact that somebody's watching them or looking at them or subpoenaing their information. It's kind of like you know, the policeman that's sitting there with the computer that can search anybody's license plate. Is it a violation of somebody's privacy if he searches for somebody that he thinks attractive that drove by and gets their license plate number, finds their address?
Yeah, totally.
Those type of operations, even though they're governance and audit and jurisdictional, would be logged so the person knows who's coming, who's looking for my private information.
That's great, because it's the same in HIPAA. So if you're working at a pharmacy. Mm-hmm. You just can't look up a famous actor or actress to see exactly what medications they're being prescribed.
Exactly. Yeah, and you basically, in a database structure, there's no way to hold anybody accountable to that. If they have access, they have access. But with a governed blockchain, we can say, we're going to log that these people went after the data. And adding two things on the top here that we that you won't see in any other blockchain implementation. One, the customer data access. Now everybody owns their own data. Everybody keeps track of it. But we know where we might be able to get it. We know how to contact those people. So it adds an individual data sale model, a mom and pop business on the internet. The way to sell privacy, integrity, over time, rights to usage over time, which we know is digital rights management. We're taking and enabling the individual on the internet by making transactions that empower their privacy.
So, for example, if I'm understanding this correct, let me know if I'm wrong. For example, if I give a medical doctor access to my healthcare information, I can open it to that doctor and then close it back myself.
For a certain span of time.
Huh.
Opened in a certain view that is permission-based.
So the doctor can get this information, the pharmacist can get pharmacy information, and obviously, that example, mm-hmm. they may cross-pollinate in some, but if absolutely. I want to separate who has access to what data, I can do that.
And the fact whether they actually got in and opened the data also becomes transparent to you.
Yeah.
That's now, think about right now, what is a medical company? We'll go into medical because you're talking about that. If they want 1,000 people to have a certain disease for research, they go pay Google.
Yeah.
In a model like this, they pay 50 cents to everybody as an individual. We change the game. We give the rights back to the people.
So you own your own data.
Yeah.
Entirely own your own data.
Yeah.
It's not relying on this, someone else.
Exactly. And you'll see some, you know, big companies are supporting blockchain, selling, blockchain cloud services or whatever. Mm-hmm. But the biggest companies make money from your data and from having everybody's data of the same type. And if people start to, if that visibility starts to go away, it becomes disruptive for some big players in the industry. It's a game-changing technology.
Yeah, you're correct on that. In regards to blockchain, this seems amazing for privacy. If we're all using the same blockchain, just to calm curiosity, because someone may be thinking, if we're all using this particular technology, are we then inherently throwing all of our eggs in one basket?
And that's a perfect segue into what we're moving into, because that is something that has to be addressed on here. Are we, one, the technology limitations. Two, how can we separate this out so that we have the information, we'll say, protected? For EMP is actually one of the use cases they're looking at. Think of a RAID array that puts data across several drives.
Yes.
Blockchain now gives us that capability to disperse data geographically with our distributed ledgers so we can recreate it later. Just hold that one for thought. And the last segment on there in disposition is a way to think about, we don't have to keep data forever and have to go back through all the data continuously, is designed right into this privacy for the people blockchain. So what does this look like? This marketplace, we're calling it, user-empowered marketplace, adaptable to any business model, individualized data controls we just talked about, transaction contracts, basically the smart contract concept, mm-hmm. done a little differently for this licensing model. One of the things needed for governance is the ability for a state to say, we issue you 100 licenses to do 100 transactions. Now on a blockchain, an individual or a company can use that same model, make a transaction, and issue licenses for somebody else to use them. It's a game changer.
Wow.
Everybody has the same control. And incentivized for engagement over time. So changing from people mining to get that Bitcoin right away at the tip of the blockchain to how do we incentivize people to be involved long term? That was a key feature of this effort. And it really helps now to have people have their own business models. individuals, mom and pop shop type of thing. Other things that are almost byproducts is, think of now, if you have people's transactions performance over time, you have a trust. This whole platform is based on building trust and keeping determined who has the most trust and what levels of trust they have, which is directly related to risk. Now, quantifiable risk and quality are byproducts. It's a game changer in several different areas. Cybersecurity controls built right in, which is something that is a whole nother topic. Yeah. We'll just say that with the incentive model, the ability to make people do something at a certain time, I call it positive presence on the internet, is basically doesn't exist. We have the right to enforce positive presence and the ability to.
Okay, another feature. Because the internet was not created with cybersecurity baked in.
No.
Cybersecurity was not baked into the internet. We're kind of using it not really what it's designed for.
It was initially designed to communicate, and it's doing that. It's doing what it was designed for.
But
it needs another thought process on top of that. And that's this is kind of, we'll say this is the uniformity marketplace that starts those capabilities that roll out on top of this over time. Huh. Yeah. But things like, I mean, this arrangement, I like this, I don't know what you call this, is six clear, but it's the six little bubbles, but uniformity in the middle. You know, accountability of how data's, like identification of who and what's done what, earth-friendly, getting away from the mining, data control by the owners, empowering mom and pop, and reliability over time. This marketplace brings those capabilities, and this is why everybody that is, if you think, what is my privacy worth to me, you should be getting onto this effort and donating to it and getting involved and getting on the marketplace as early as you can.
Yeah, it sounds fantastic. Seems one may think that as a lot of individuals are trying to gravitate away from technology, much like the smart locks, so many people will not get a smart lock because they want to get away from technology in that regard. This seems to be putting more emphasis in a different type of technology, a different type of technology where everything is going to be utilizing this blockchain with some of the most information we deem the most private, like your healthcare information and your business. As a small business owner myself, like your business information, particularly utilizing this blockchain. What would you say for those that, as we try to move away from technology, some people are trying to move away from technology, like I'll never get cameras in my house because I don't want people just peeping in on me. Mm-hmm. People put the slider in front of their camera, their webcam, because they don't want people watching them. Mm-hmm. This seems to be more inviting towards a new type of technology.
I would say there's nothing new here. I mean, even blockchain that started 2009 with the Satoshi Nakamoto paper.
Yes, sir.
I was working on what they called trust chaining. Same thing, same concept. For years before that, it just took a new name and it was related to money. So it was speculation and people's fascination with the money aspect.
Yes, sir.
Even with blockchain and all these pieces, it's more of a coming together of social uniformity. All the pieces are there. We're just now saying we're taking a social look at the needs for managing and organizing our data.
Okay.
I'm not saying put things on the blockchain that you wouldn't put on Google, because you already put them all on Google. I'm telling you, you think that you don't have this stuff on all these engines up there. They got you.
Yeah, that's unfortunately, some would say privacy is gone. At this point, privacy.
That was one of the headlines from the New York Times.
Yeah.
Privacy ended in like 1971.
Yeah, because you can Google everyone. Everyone you can Google. If you dig hard enough, you'll find yourself or you'll find whomever you're looking for. The information's out there.
I would say this is a social effort to try to start taking that control back and enabling the beginnings of the tools that do it. That's all we're doing.
Just putting the pieces together.
Yep. That's exactly. So when you look at what does it take to do something like this, and this is kind of the first public look anybody's had at some of these pieces, but think about what the internet is. The internet is made by a reproducible engine we call the router. Millions of them out there, and they just relay data from one place to another. And then a service domain name service that takes what name you have, registers to a number, where to go get it and everything. But between these two kind of engines, they're managed by Internic, I believe. Is that,
yes, sir.
It's a non-governing body that manages it worldwide, and they just say that no two people have the same domain all over the world. We have different numbers. We keep it all separate and everything. But these two services, a router, which is just a physical piece of equipment, mm-hmm. and a domain service, which is another equipment that you might get at your company, a domain router, a domain name service, DNS server. Mm-hmm. But the whole internet's enabled by this modular, very simple, small components. The blockchain development community looked at the blockchain the same way. They said, we need a distributed ledger, a peer ledger, and a governance server, and make them both modular, and we can expand it just like DNS and the router. And it's coming out. We're getting ready to demo the first versions of this and then roll it out and scale it. That's what Privacy for the People is looking for, the crowdsource funding, the greater community to come in and say, yes, we're going to help roll this out, and we're going to be early adopters and ground floor people with it, with this technology.
And keeping it open and nonpartisan and where you own your data as a person. How, if that information is needed, and it seems like it's auditable with jurisdiction, so if the police or the government needs to access that information, they could access that information, but that information gets logged. Mm-hmm. And that information gets logged and notified to the user, correct? To the person.
It's available for public record.
Okay.
I mean, it's like that with the courts right now, except for nobody has access to it. You have to walk down to the building and do a search and print out something on paper. It's a mess if you ever try to do it. But that's by law, they have to make this all public anyway.
So it's public and it's accessible quicker.
It would be accessible in the way that we all use the world today. It's just taking things we do in the physical world and making a virtual method of enabling all those same things. Nothing, like I said, this is nothing new. This is your psychology, you know, cyber psychology, bringing what people require and the needs through a little bit of technology to their fingertips.
Yeah, it seems most individuals, they want the convenience. They, you know, we constantly, as cyber professionals, they balance convenience and security. If it's not convenient, can you make it secure enough? If it's too secure, is it
secure enough? Is always the is always the thing out there, right?
Yeah. So that's the current battle that most cyber professionals, I would argue, every cyber professional is facing. The handcuff you have is that your organization needs to make money. For example, Amazon. Amazon, they're huge online presence, and so with the online presence, that's how they make money. Everything's secure if you just take it offline. If you unplug everything, it's secure. Their handcuff is the fact that you buy everything online. And once it's online, it's going to be accessible to the internet.
Why did we make this progression to Amazon? Because we don't trust small players on the internet.
It's true.
If you find the most awesome pair of shoes on the internet and it's a site that's in Japan, the best you can tell, right? They say, send me $1,000, I'll send you the shoes. Do you send them $1,000?
No.
No. They say, and you tell them, send me the shoes, I'll send you $1,000. Did they send you the shoes?
No.
No. Because it's the trust, that middle piece that we put together that says a neutral party can trust, which is what blockchain and cryptocurrency was built on. It doesn't have to have a government in there. It doesn't have to have an agency. It can just be peer-to-peer trust-based. Mm-hmm. So spanning on that same thought process, you look at now transactions. Smart contracts, if you were to say. Anything that we do online that requires proof of two people participating, proof of location, proof of time, proof of who's related to who, proof of a machine, an identity, a human identity, all these things that we can connect together are all transactions, just like they proposed with Bitcoin in that neutral-based ledger.
So you foresee banking, medical records, legal records, all coming together using this?
Yes, absolutely, in an expandable method. And one of the big pieces that was looked at for this is the neutral governance aspect. This group now is under contract with the state of Colorado to make this neutral governance possible. And here's some of the things that are being considered. You know, public versus private. Where does the slider go, and how do you enable it with technology for them to say, this set of data is public, this set's private, this has to verify the transactions, and where's that go and where's that kept?
Is the user going to decide that, or is that going to be decided for them?
That's the next one, onboard versus user data on system. So now what goes publicly on the chain versus is stored locally under the user's control that is now verifiable on the public chain. Without, you know, we can put a hash and on the chain and verifies data, and that data doesn't have to be up there. That separation is built right in from the ground up.
So what doesn't go on the chain, can they decide?
They can decide, exactly. They slide the scaler, whatever they want. Huh. Whatever you label as private doesn't go on the chain.
So they can really lock down everything.
Yep, and they can set what by one of the requirements are is by law, by legislative, they're going to have to move the slider and say what pieces have to be public and what has to be private. So we just have to enable it with technology for them to make that decision later. That's what we mean by neutral governance.
I can foresee a lot of people thinking, because you brought up Mark Zuckerberg, which is absolutely.
I didn't say that name.
Well, you did. Nah, okay, you did not bring up Mark Zuckerberg. If you didn't catch that, rewind. But if I can imagine some people thinking that with this, is there plausible? You may not be able to answer this right now. If there's a user agreement, and then someone has to click "I agree," and then click next. We know that user agreement is essentially what happened in regards to that particular court case and what happened with Apple in their particular court case. Well, if you agree, then that information is accessible. Mm-hmm. Granted, it's locked down, but...
But if it never goes up there, and by technology, only the parts that say what I have goes up there that I want to be public, and the rest is you get from me directly, it changes the game.
So no built-in backdoor.
No. So I said the any government, any backdoor inquiries is logged as to, yes, we can issue a subpoena that a government has access to something, but it's not going to be backdoor, closed loop.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. Because that user agreement is what does everyone in.
Right? Mm-hmm. And you know what? Because we're not under any government. We're really, this work is sanctioned by the state of Colorado to have privacy for citizens as the primary charter. To spur business development is actually what the local Colorado Springs effort's about. And these two are coming together as how do we make a grouping of people able to have their own company online and all grow locally. So it's an effort that's looking at non-Big Brother, we'll just say. And when you take Big Brother out of the picture, it changes everything.
How do you foresee this growing without Big Brother getting their hands in it? If we're going to use medical records, the Department of Health is going to want their hands in it. If we're going to do transactions with this,
that's what these pieces here are. They say what parts are public, what parts are private, and they set the requirement. That's what the third one is. That data proxy agent and regulatory requirements, how's that balanced? What parts have to be regulated? They can label those as have to be private. What parts are allowed to be public, and what parts may the user decide is public and private. Sets that third kind of dichotomy here of where do you put the slider. Like I said, all we do is enable the technology for them to decide later. And I always tell the guys this when they're developing, it's like, okay, if you've designed something where we're making a decision, we're not looking to the governance platform for what's the local, the recent legislation telling us it is, then we've messed up and we have to go back and reset. So
you foresee Big Brother being okay with hands off?
The state of Colorado is okay with hands off. Whether a federal government wants to be more proactive, it would just register that they're being proactive. It's the same things we do in the current world, just with technology solutions to scale to the numbers that we do with online transactions.
So regardless, the user will be notified.
I would say the information would be available. Whether we send notifications to everybody, I think is overwhelming, you know. Think of how do we trust people? Have you ever done any study in trust, and I had to do a lot of studies in trust. We actually trust people from how they relate to us in individual instances of that we consider trustworthiness over time.
Yes.
And we don't actually trust people that are perfect. We trust people that make minor mistakes and then rectify those mistakes and just don't do it too often. Mm-hmm. So there's this balance of how people trust based on the psychological effect, but we can only hold those trust understanding relationships with 50, 200 people, you know, in that range, people that are really talented, 400 or 500. Mm-hmm. How many people are you connected to on the internet?
Millions.
And this is why we just all default to trusting Amazon and the big guys. And they've actually implemented this with their policy. Basically, that policy, it says, if you don't get it, we just ship you out another one. And if you get both of them, you keep them both. That's that infraction, that trust validation, that they took care of me in my interest if they made a mistake. And it actually, with the psyche of how people work, it increases their trust of an organization that does that.
That's true. What one could argue, or not argue, we'll say that people are innately told to trust the individuals that currently hold that data, that currently hold their EPHI or their PHI, and that currently holds their PI and their social security number. Mm-hmm. They're told to trust. So you don't really have a choice.
I don't think you have, even if somebody tells you you can't trust them, I don't think you have a choice.
Yeah, you're right. There's plenty of people that do not trust the same individuals, but they're going to hold that data regardless.
Yeah.
They have access to that data regardless. Do you foresee a transition period from going from our current system to this new blockchain system?
Well, I would say that what we're doing is basing everything on trust. So keeping track of trust as transactions occur over time and doing it with an algorithm that matches how people view trust. Mm-hmm. And those things like some of these next jurisdictional things, data aggregation and jurisdiction. Now we know who we trust, we might have models that say if they're not allowed to have certain levels of data, of my data, if their trust is low. If their trust goes up, I'll give them more data. I'll allow that, or more access to my data, or easier access to getting it from me. I don't have to think about them as much. But as soon as we have trust calculated now over time, you know, we turn the switch and the marketplace is off, privacy for the people is up and running. 2 months later, we have 2 months worth of transactions. A year later, we have a year's worth. And all that shows your trust. We're not going to have trust ratings beyond when we turn the switch on, beyond when your program enters the ability to track trust with immutability. So it's going to happen over time based on who's on board. But if you think about it in terms of this is a way to make ethics and trust profitable.
So people aren't going to walk around with a social responsibility or a social score, like you have a score of 100 and I have a score of 20, so no one will do business with me. It's kind of like that Black Swan episode, if you've ever seen that.
Think of it as your actions over time build how reliable you are. And people might go after somebody that has lower trust, but it's higher risk. And you might have to have lower rates. And the people with high trust might be able to charge more. Now you have built-in quality control.
So kind of like a credit score.
Yeah.
When before you get a credit card, you'll have this particular trust score as a user in this environment.
Mm-hmm.
Some people would fear that. Some people would fear that.
You know, I would tell you what, that was the one person in the state that we had, out of all the legislators that voted on it, Colorado, we had two that didn't vote recused it, the voting, just to say, I don't really want to vote either way. And one that voted against, one in the whole state. And his thought, his reason why, and I talked to him afterwards, and I think we kind of came to an understanding, it's probably not as valid as he thought. But he said that, I'm afraid the state would have too much power. Hmm. And that's what we're looking at here. We're looking at a state that wants to limit the authority and the power of government. And that's what this whole program's about.
Yeah. Well, who would control the trust scores? Is it kind of like
it would be a calculation, an algorithm.
Like a rating?
That was public. The algorithm would be public when we release it.
Yeah. So people just can't thumbs up or thumbs down you as you
nope.
walk by. Like,
it's
hey,
not,
you stepped on my shade.
It's not generated by, it's generated by your activity, not by somebody else's opinion.
So your actions is going to generate yep. your particular trust level.
Mm-hmm.
And as you go up, you're viewed as more trusted. As you go down, do you fear people?
And you're viewed as trusted by, you know, you're viewed as trusted by your continuous participation over time.
So the more you participate, the more trusted you become.
Yeah.
So if you're a newbie to this situation, they know that proceed with caution, maybe.
Exactly, which is what we do as humans anyway. Somebody new comes in, we proceed with caution, right? So those dichotomies, and this now is a, if you're looking at the screen, is a picture of what the ledger looks like with all the main pieces. And this is where we talk about economic development now. Every one of those colored blocks has hundreds of companies, hundreds of business models, whole entire multiple hundreds of industries in those. And by designing the minimal components necessary to support them all, the marketplace is being designed with stubbed out these components that now every company, every individual can develop their own business model on top of. So it enables now a parallel growing, expandable indefinitely, distributed ledger that everybody can do their own business model on.
So how would this marketplace look? You referred to it a couple of times, and I want to make sure I fully understand when you say marketplace. It seems like, is it just an online shopping mall kind of per se?
No, it would be a place where everybody does their transactions
okay.
and keeps their data
That's
stored
the bank.
Offline. Yeah, it'd be the distributed ledger, the verification of everybody's transactions, the participation over time, the incentive model of how you make money, how you are paid. All is involved with the marketplace.
So that's the
what your business is data, anything data, technological age, anything you do with data, whether it's manufacturing, entering stuff into the supply chain, transitioning it from one place to another through the supply, ownership transition, paid services, I'm just reading off the blocks on the mm-hmm. screen if you're looking, status updates, data purchases or data digital rights management, whether it's auditing or oversight, judicial or even law enforcement, or it's on the other, on the far right, we see just the analytics and risk. What happens when this now engine of being able to trust people in the millions of people like you do, the 30 people you can trust that you know, mm-hmm. is available? It changes the game.
So the marketplace is the hub of everything.
The hub of everything.
So
think of it as like an internet. It expands like a router, DNS server. How many routers are there in the internet?
There's millions.
Millions. It can expand in that same method indefinitely.
And so
and that's what the design is about. Yep.
The marketplace will continue to grow. Just a calm curiosity, is that marketplace hosted anywhere? Or is this, do we all participate as the marketplace?
You would buy your own systems that store data that would be doing either physical machines or cloud.
So it's kind of, for example, you're just buying a server like you would in AWS.
Yeah, so let's think about it. There, if anybody knows models where you have people store memory on your computer and store it across 100 people's machines and have spare hard drives, it's a marketplace that expands like that.
Huh. Interesting. Very, very, very interesting. That marketplace is expandable. Seems like it can do absolutely everything in security.
Well, it's a base model for everybody to link to. You got to build your business model on top of it. You got to take a supply chain module and build your transaction contract on top of it. You have to design your little handheld device on top of the software that supports one of these modules. And that's what I said. Our call to action is we want anybody out there listening to get involved, to come support the effort. They're doing a crowdsource funding, and the highest level of funding, I think, is like $500, gives you access to actually get to be a ground floor developer company on this marketplace.
So
and that's what it's about.
Access.
Yes.
So the earlier you adopt, the earlier you participate.
Absolutely.
The better off you'll be.
Absolutely. Come and learn, understand, participate. And I would just ask, what's your privacy worth to you?
Privacy is everything.
If you have a value for your privacy, log on to Privacy for the People. We're not starting the crowdsource funding until October 22nd because we want everybody to be ready. We want everybody in the cybersecurity industry that's listening, everybody in the world that values privacy, to know about this when it goes live and come and get involved. We want this to be ground floor, ground zero.
I would argue that's fantastic. Everybody should get involved in this. We all have blinds on our houses. We all have locks on our doors. If you don't value your privacy, why you have a phone?
Exactly. Privacyforthepeople.org. Everybody check it out. Thanks for joining today, too, Eric.
No problem. Thank you.
Yeah, Eric, we went a little bit long, but tell us a little bit about your effort and how people can get involved with the Handshake Leadership as well.
Handshake Leadership, just all we would ask is just give us access or help us work with the school district, the particular school district. That's our main focus in the cyber community. We want to raise the bar with cyber education in the K-12 realm. Because as of right now, there's no difference between...
So if somebody's a school or an educator that wants to train their teachers, they should reach out to you?
Please do.
How would they get a hold of you? Give them a site.
Handshakeleadership.com.
Okay. Handshakeleadership.com. You heard it here on New Cyber Frontier. We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember, please follow and participate as New Cyber Frontier is supporting a grassroots community effort to empower the individual in the digital age. Check it out at privacyforthepeople.org. Also, make sure to join our mailing list so we can keep you informed. If you have an idea, if you have a question you would like to hear answered, or if you just want to get involved in what we're doing, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links because they are the ones that really make this show possible. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.